The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
To get started on the line from the Committee for Geelong, we have the CEO, Jennifer Cromarty, with us. Good morning, Jennifer. Thanks for being on the program once again.
No problem. Morning, Mitchell.
Well, first of all, we spent a lot of time on the program yesterday reflecting on the life and times of Frank Costa, but I believe he was one of the key people involved with actually starting the Committee for Geelong. Is that right?
It is. So the committee was founded in 2001, and it was the work of Frank, along with a few other people, to create a committee for Geelong. They were looking at the committee for Melbourne and thinking it was really important for Geelong to have a voice that was outside of government, which is, you know, one of our core remits. And we're actually reflecting on this a few months ago because it's our 20th anniversary this year. So we were in the throes of, well, we are still planning an event for later this year, but I actually read through the minutes of the very first meeting of the Committee for Geelong, and it was held at Frank's boardroom. And I believe his boardroom, and he hosted those meetings for quite some time and was deputy chair for a period as well. So, yeah, I am going to have a few more discussions with people about this over the next few months to hear what those meetings were like. But absolutely, I don't think the Committee for Geelong would exist without Frank.
Do you get a sense from those minutes as to what the concerns were of the people of Geelong or the committee representatives at that time all those years ago?
Yeah, look, what's really interesting about the initial minutes was that there was a need, or there was felt a need, to make sure that it wasn't just about business, it was about all of Geelong. So there was an equal focus on the social issues as there were the economic issues. So I found that really interesting because I think it's really important for people to understand that the Committee for Geelong endeavours in all of the work that it does to have that balance around, well, what is genuine prosperity. But equally, it was because, you know, there would have been, as there has been from time to time in Geelong, a concern that perhaps some issues weren't being raised to government that were in the long-term strategic interests of the community. So it's trying to ensure that the voice to government isn't overly politicised. So that is, again, just core to the focus. And our first chair was Jim Cousins, who was chair for some 10 years. So he's well-known in Geelong as well. So, and Peter Dorling was the first CEO. So those names might be familiar to you, Mitchell, but
yes,
that was a really strong group of people, including Bernadette Uzelac as well, who formed the original committee.
And we know that Frank was quite influential in Geelong politics and was clearly passionate about advocating for the city, otherwise he wouldn't have founded or started the Committee for Geelong in the way that you describe. Is that going to leave a big vacuum in terms of advocacy, and who will fill that, do you think?
Yeah, look, it's a really sad time, and I think having spoken to a few people and been contacted by people over the last few days, I think there's just sadness around his generosity of spirit, the time he gave to not just people wanting to talk to government, but people trying to raise money for really important causes. So when we talk about a vacuum, I think it's across all spheres, to be honest. Many people were great friends of Frank. You know, he was a person that's been in and out of my family life for a long time in terms of different things that have happened to me and my family. But certainly when we talk about an ear to government, when things were challenging, I know we would often bring Frank into the picture, and this is prior to even my role at the Committee for Geelong.
Mm.
You know, Frank was very involved with a lot of big projects and issues that I was involved with personally. So vacuum, absolutely. No doubt we will still be talking to government, and, you know, I know that there's a healthy level of respect when Geelong is, you know, fronting up in Canberra or in Spring Street. But certainly with Frank, you can't replace someone who's got such a strong legacy with such deep respect across all walks of government. So, yes, there is a vacuum, and it's a very sad time for us here in Geelong.
Now, talk to us about the Future of Geelong, or Future of Central Geelong, briefing series.
Yeah, so the state government is soon to release what's called the Central Geelong Framework Plan. So this has been some time in the making. It basically will give Central Geelong a well, a framework, including the idea of precincts in the city. This may not be sounding illogical to anyone, but at the moment our planning scheme has central activity districts, but it doesn't say things like, here is our health district, so this is the planning for it. Here is our, you know, retail district, this is how the planning reflects that. And also height limits, which has been out in the public realm now for a few months, which is saying what height can buildings be built in this area. So we're waiting with bated breath to see the framework plan in all of its detail, and we'll have a month to reply. So while the Committee for Geelong have been talking about issues around the CBD for quite some time, I thought it would be timely to run a series of Zooms with my members over the next few months to start thinking about what does future City Geelong look like. So we're kicking it off this week, and we're hearing from Matt Anson at Urbis about what makes great placemaking, you know, what makes a great place. And Urbis have some incredible data they'll be showcasing for us. And then we've invited the likes of Vicky Perrott from Geelong Sustainability to talk about what is a green city. We're going to have topics around, you know, getting more people to live in the city. So Geelong is a residential city or a student city. And then we'll be rolling into hearing from the state government and other key stakeholders who have a voice around this plan. And the aim really from the Committee for Geelong is not only to make the submission, but to kick off potentially another project that will align with, for example, the Resilient Geelong research that we did last year and some of the other work that we've been working on the last few years, and bringing it all together to say, what now post-COVID does the city really look like? What is its purpose and function? How are we going to design a city that's only going to make it more livable, more attractive, and actually future-proofed, if I can say. So it's a big couple of months, including lots of federal and state budget work as well, Mitchell.
Yes, I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on the role of the CBD post-COVID, because I've been reading there's a lot of concern about the Melbourne CBD, and some people have even described it as dying simply because they don't have the same number of workers that they once had. I don't know, do we have that problem in Geelong, and how should we then use that CBD space if it's not going to be used as a place of business primarily?
Yeah, this is where we'll be having lots of discussions, but I'll tell you my view and whether this holds true. We can test it down the track. But, yes, definitely the city needs to be a place where people come to be entertained, to shop, to work, but also to live. So I think when Melbourne was facing some significant issues, you know, many decades ago, they actually had the issue of people coming into the city for work and then going home and the city being quiet, empty at night. So they kicked off Postcode 3000, which was to get more people living in the city, so residents. So I think, number one, there's going to be obviously changes in terms of the number of people coming into the city to work. How long that goes for, you know, I'm not sure, but I think there is a permanent shift now in terms of people working from home more. That doesn't mean our economy changes in terms of its overall output. It just means people might be spending more money near where they live. So that's a different kind of economic opportunity for retailers and hospitality. But what I think we really need to focus on is making our city as attractive as possible for people to want to come in, explore the cultural section, come shopping. So let's really think about what our retail offer is, our entertainment offer. You know, we've got great, you know, bars and restaurants that people will come to specifically to, you know, have something to eat and enjoy meeting with their friends or work colleagues. But we absolutely have to focus on the strategies to increase the number of people who live in our city. And at the moment, my understanding is there's probably 2,000 people who actually live in the city. We need to make that close to 10,000 from my understanding of previous work that's been done. And that can be a combination of, you know, people who live here permanently and also international or domestic students in this environment. So I think it has to be a mixed response, but at the forefront we have to make the city as attractive as possible, including, you know, finalising projects like the Green Spine.
Yes, how are we going with the Green Spine? I was actually down there yesterday having a look, and I think there's some roadworks going on further along Mallop Street towards Johnston Park. I don't know if that's connected to the Green Spine or if that's something else that's happening at the moment.
No, it absolutely is. All the work outside the WorkSafe building is what you call Green Spine 1A. So 1B is the other side of the road, which will be done in due course, but 1A is well underway. And there's also plans that I believe are close to being finalised for the section that will go from Yarra to Bellarine. So that is the next section. So obviously they've completed Moorabool to Yarra. And then obviously what we've got to do is finish that greens final all the way to the Botanic Gardens. So it is a long-term project. You know, there will need to be funding put forward, but it's definitely still underway and still happening. And it's just one project of what the Committee for Geelong, when the work of Vision 2, which goes back a bit, but when Vision 2 was a project that basically said, how do we vision the city? The Green Spine was just one of those projects. So, you know, I've got a really strong belief that we need to go back and look at the work of Vision 2, start thinking now about our city in a post-COVID environment, and start really talking strongly to government about the sorts of things that we need to see, including Moorabool Street, which is a beautiful street. It's just not being used in the way that we think it could be. And I know there's other people in Geelong who would echo their concerns. And equally, this looks at things like traffic along Ryrie Street. There's a lot of issues we've discussed for quite some time in Geelong that we just really need to land and actually now do some work to make it all happen.
Yes, well, this program is in its seventh year this year, and I do remember some of the discussions going back to the early days, and some of the ideas have been implemented successfully, others haven't been implemented over that time. So I suppose it really is about trying to come up with one vision that gets a bit of a consensus happening and then going along with it, because the squabbling doesn't really help.
No, I agree. And look, when I wrote a statement remembering Frank Costa, I quoted him from some years ago saying that what's really important for people in Geelong is to come together, because if we don't come together, our voice gets fractured and we're not really heard, and we also aren't able to work on the outcomes that we think will be the most impactful for the city. So there's one thing we can do. I mean, there's many things we can do, but just to honour Frank, we all need to work together. I know you've got Mayor Asher and Julia Baggio from G21 coming on. You know, the committee, the city and G21, as just an example, can continue working together on shared priorities. It's really, really powerful. And things like Vision 2, we did have a shared vision, not without cost. I think it's really important that we go back and honour the work that's been done in the past, where we've had an agreement, and start looking at those really big strategic projects that we need to get up and running for Geelong.
And you mentioned a lot of work ahead on the state and local budgets, and presumably maybe a federal budget as well. We've got the mayor, of course, about to come on to talk about the local budget. I'm just wondering if you have, as the committee, any thoughts on that, and even a state budget, and what sorts of things you might be hopeful of seeing.
Yeah, well, the federal budget. So, yes, the state budget's coming out after the federal budget. But in terms of council, the Committee for Geelong did a submission to the council plan. We'll have a good look at the breakdown of the budget. We usually don't comment too much on the ins and outs of the council budget. We just talk about general themes that we'd like to see funded and promoted. So probably not a whole lot of comment on the budget itself, but we will be putting in a short submission to follow up on our council plan submission. So I think Steph and I have actually had some discussions about this, and you know, I think that what they've put out there in terms of council plan gives us a really good direction for the next 4 years, which is important. And I believe the first time that's happened. It's always been usually just a one-year type process for budgeting. But yeah, in terms of federal, if you don't mind, Mitchell, federal is coming up. Yeah, so we're actually going to be, as you know, I stay up and watch that budget with great interest. There's been some early announcements, which are going to be really impactful, because the state budget comes afterwards. So to a degree, I think there's a little bit of they wait and see what comes in the Fed budget and make some changes at the last minute. But the federal budget's going to be absolutely huge, because they're looking at major issues like the Royal Commission into aged care, and we've already seen big announcements around childcare. There's, you know, mooted changes around our tax system. So I think it's the budget that will be preparing us for an election, Mitchell, you know. Whether this is the budget we have and there's an election before the next one is likely. It's highly likely. So you'll see that there's going to be probably some sweeteners to make sure people feel as though they're being obviously looked after in this environment. So federal budget will be doing an analysis, and we'll be hosting a panel the next day with City of Greater Geelong, G21 and the Chamber of Commerce with the committee. And then Sarah Henderson will come and give us a presentation a few weeks after that. And then, yes, straight into the state budget, which we've got quite a few things that we'll be looking for, and I don't think much of this will be new in terms of the discussions we've had, but, you know, we put out a list late last year on behalf of, you know, groups in Geelong, and that included the roads and infrastructure needed for the Spirit of Tasmania, you know, the Northern Arc, or, you know, wellbeing centre that I know Steph has been really lobbying quite hard for. We'd be really keen to see that project funded by the state government. And there's a few others, including potential funding for Brand Geelong, which, again, is very close to, you know, coming out with some creative responses. But we'd really appreciate support from the state government to help implement Brand Geelong. So the state budget's always one that we looked at really keenly, but I'll be watching the federal budget with keen interest in the next week. It's next week.
Oh, it's that quickly. Wow. Okay.
Yes, it is. I think it's the 11th.
And I think you've been in the, I don't know if it was the federal or the state, but you've been in the budget lockup before, haven't you?
Yes.
Both?
Yes. And yes, I have. Oh, no, federal I haven't. You have to go to Canberra, obviously.
Yes.
And yep. It's usually not working within the things that I was doing at the time, but definitely state budget lockup. With COVID, they didn't have one last year. And I'm not entirely sure. I think they've had to do a restricted version for this year. If there is one and I'm allowed to go and invited to go, I will go. And the budget lockups are fantastic because you're able to sit in, hear briefings from ministers, sometimes the treasurer and or the premier may even drop in. And you're actually in a room with other groups, special interest groups in my instance, and all the bureaucrats are there. So you can actually go through the budget papers well before they're released and ask all the questions you need so that when it stood up in Parliament, you're ready to go with the media release. But last year, I can tell you, it was absolutely very, very challenging to hear the budget, get the budget at the same time as everyone else, and then have people in media call you straight away, which is very difficult when you haven't had a chance to absorb the details. So
yes,
fingers crossed I can go to the budget lockup. But if not, I'll try and do my best to get my head around the budget as quickly as possible.
Look,
yeah, so the state budget, sorry, I was just going to say the state budget, I think, is around the 20th for memory, but yeah.
All right, so by the time we talk to you next month, we'll be able to have a full review of both the federal and the state budget and see where it all lands.
Yeah, no problem.
Look, thanks for being on the program. Really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next month.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Jennifer Cromarty with us there, the CEO of the Committee for Geelong.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.